A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler-receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
We're sorry. All circuits are busy now. Will you please try your call again later? This is a recording.
Ha! And that's not the only problem we've had this week. We've had a bit of this, too.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks. When the gong gets tough, the
tough get going. Indeed, back in February 1986, when I started this show with an explosion, a compressor fault at our Flevo transmitter site here in Holland induced three transmitters to malfunction and caused $85,000 worth of damage. I hope today's program won't be that expensive. But no matter how loud we create explosive sound effects here in the wireless studio, they can't compare with the enormous disturbances currently happening on the sun's surface. It may be 93 million miles away, but the high-energy radiation ejected from the sun quickly interacts with the Earth's environment. This time last week, a solar flare on the sun went off, and as a result, in the early hours of Monday of this week, it gave an enormous impulse to the Earth's geomagnetic field. Mike Bird will have the numbers later for you in this program. Suffice to say, it triggered off one of the largest disturbances recorded in the last 50 years. This week also saw the launch of the US Space Shuttle. So just before we came on the air, I asked our science correspondent in North America, Dave Rosenthal, whether the solar activity has had any effect on the flight so far.
Well, Jonathan, these are by far the most disturbed solar terrestrial conditions the shuttle's ever operated under. I think this week, the Fredericksburg A Index, that's a measure of how disturbed the Earth's magnetic field is, peaked at 248. That's the second highest ever recorded. So right now on the face of the sun, there's a region they've numbered at 5395. It's a naked eye visible. If you look under using a safe solar filter, it's approximately 60 times the size of the Earth on the face of the sun. And that has been what's been causing most of the difficulties. This region is rotating slowly across the face of the sun, and it won't rotate off the disk until the 18th or 19th of the month. So we can look for these disturbances to continue.
A word of warning, though, never, never look directly at the sun with the naked eye. You could seriously damage the retina. Several calls to Radio Netherlands' answer line have asked how the solar activity can affect satellite communication. Well, first of all, you have problems with what's called spacecraft charging. Solar particles hit one side of the spacecraft and charge it to very high voltages with respect to the other side. Although most satellites ensure that their artificial grounding system is tied to one point, this effect can happen so quickly that the induced charges can damage sensitive electronic equipment on board. Sensitive microelectronics are also affected by high-energy particles which penetrate the spacecraft and reset or upset microprocessors. Not only is communication with the spacecraft liable to interruption, but other electronics on board controlling the satellite's attitude in space, with respect to the Earth, can be set off balance too. Essentially, ground command stations lose control of their satellites for a while until they can reset and reprogram the computers on board. And finally, there's the satellite drag problem. The increased number of particles in the low-orbit environment of the atmosphere can bump into the spacecraft and slow it down. This causes the satellite to drop into a slightly lower orbit. And if no fuel is aboard the craft to allow a course correction, well, the data which the satellite will finally orbit so low that it burns up in the atmosphere becomes nearer than planned. The U.S. Space Environment Services Center in Boulder, Colorado, has been examining the increased solar activity over the last few weeks in detail and advising satellite owners that without corrective action, their satellites may last a lot less longer than they'd planned. But it's not all bad news.
The positive, of course, is the fact that the Aurora Borealis has been seen tremendously further south than it normally is. For example, this week it was seen in Key West, Florida, which is in the subtropical latitudes.
We saw some beautiful northern light displays here in Holland on Monday night too. But with this shuttle mission just about over, is there anything radio-wise to report, David?
Well, yes, there are several feeder frequencies in HF, but I think what might be of great interest to a lot of people around the world is the fact that the shuttle is now simulcasting its downlinked communications via OSCAR satellite downlink frequencies. If you have any sort of 2-meter ham reception equipment that can tune the 145 megahertz frequency range, FM, you can listen to this. The frequencies that they're using are 145.945 megahertz. That's a primary frequency. And then 145.955 megahertz is a secondary. Again, these are OSCAR downlink frequencies, and they're not using the satellite itself, simply the frequencies.
Now, if people have access to the ANOC bulletin board, you've got some messages left on there, I guess.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I recorded all the frequencies that we just mentioned, plus the entire S-band communication frequency schedule on the ANOC bulletin board service. That's area code in the United States, 309-688-0604.
And those shuttle frequencies again were 145.945 and 145.955 megahertz. Dave Rosenthal reporting there. Now, guess this national anthem.
A week today, Media Network profiles the work at Radio Netherlands Bonaire Relay Station. In the mid-60s, we hired airtime on both medium wave and short wave from Trans World Radio Facility on the southern tip of this Caribbean island.
You can see it today. There's a big dual diversity rhombic antenna out behind Radio Netherlands studios. Trans World Radio had an operator, usually one of the ladies, who would monitor the sideband broadcasts from Hilversum and record them, and then they were in turn aired over the transmitters.
This is Amsterdam calling on a transmitter of the Netherlands PTT. This is Amsterdam calling on a transmitter.
In 69, we completed our own transmitting station on the north side of the island.
Probably those people upstairs knew well in advance of the rest of us that there would eventually be our own relay station on the island of Bonaire, having used the Trans World Radio facilities for a long, long time. So once that Bonaire station was up, things got a lot better in terms of program reception and response from listeners.
Next week, voices from Radio Netherlands past, but also the present. We look at what it takes to keep two 300-kilowatt transmitters on the air.
The diesel engines, in order to generate the amount of power we have, we use about 6,000 liters of gas oil per day.
Media Network's Bonaire profile this time next week includes news of the relay station's future, and there'll be special QSL cards for reports on the program. No excuses. Come with us to the Caribbean.
Back to the phones. And who have we got now on the line?
Well, hello, Jonathan Marks. This is Rich, KC6BCY, as known to many amateurs, from Los Angeles, California. And you know something? I just got to say that shortwave radio is definitely looking good. Although I would like to see a lot of the audio services for a lot of the world services, like the BBC, Radio Netherlands, Radio Luxembourg, I'd like to see them all carried here by satellite, and those people with backyard dishes can be able to get them off the uplink.
Thanks, Rich. Well, coincidentally, the ANOC Computer Bulletin Board carried a fascinating report this week from Philip Dampier, which answers your question. Philip's been experimenting with a satellite dish and compiled a fascinating dossier. To present Philip's observations, here's Pete Myers.
I bought what's called a sound SC1 unit from the American manufacturer of Heil yesterday. Now, this is a specialized receiver selling for $450 that attaches to a home satellite receiving system. It allows you to receive special audio signals transmitted in a format called SCPC. The best I can compare the sound to is the barrage of RTTY signals you hear on the shortwave that comes across in that buzzsaw sound. Having set up the receiver, I can find the feeds of many international broadcasters connecting their studios with the transmitter site. With the enormous growth in relay exchanges, the number of channels is not insignificant, and I get most of the programs in hi-fi mono instead of restricted shortwave. Turn the dish towards the Canadian Anik D1 satellite, for instance, and you can find Radio Japan, Radio France International, several Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's domestic services, including the Northern Quebec programs, two channels carrying BBC World Service, plus all of Radio Canada International services. Swing the dish round to look at the Galaxy 2 satellite, and there's more BBC World Service, plus United Nations Radio and the Christian Science Monitor. And over on the Westar 4 satellite is the Voice of Free China feeding relay transmitters in Florida, family radio in stereo, and what sounds like an FM service from somewhere, all in Japanese. Finally, on the American SATCOM 2 satellite, I can now hear programs for the Voice of America destined for both U.S. and overseas relay stations, Radio Mati for Cuba, the Armed Forces radio and TV services. Well, the list continues. Of course, satellite monitoring of international radio feeds requires more investment than a standard shortwave receiver. You need a suitable satellite dish, plus the proper type of decoder. The greatest variety seems to be on the Canadian Anik satellite, and maybe there will be feeds from Austria and China there next month when Radio Austria International and Radio Beijing start feeding programs for relay via Radio Canada International's Sackville relay station. With one exception, all the signals are hi-fi quality. The odd one out is Radio Deutsche Welle in Cologne. It sounds to me as though this is still received off-air from shortwave and then relayed again. I have noticed Radio Moscow is establishing a direct satellite feed of their world and North American service, according to Irina Korolovia, head of Radio Moscow's transcription services. This feed appeared before, using telephone-quality audio, back during the Reagan-Gorbachev summit. But now, Radio Moscow is planning a permanent, better-quality feed, mostly to service Cuba's relay of Radio Moscow, but also to try to sell North American commercial radio on broadcasting some of their live programming, including their planned call-in shows.
This is Media Network from Radio Netherlands, Holland's best legal shortwave radio station. If you live in North America, remember that on Sunday, March 26th, our broadcasts move to midnight 30 and 0330 UTC.
Salman Rushdie's book, The Satanic Verses, has occupied enough airtime around the world these last few weeks, and we don't intend to discuss the reaction on Media Network. But we will clear up a clandestine radio mystery that appeared just over 2 weeks ago. At 14:30 UTC on March the 1st, a station appeared around 9022 kHz, calling itself Radio Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The accented voice spoke English, and after giving the usual address for the Iranian External Service, handed over to a female presenter. She spent the next 45 minutes reading extracts from Salman Rushdie's book. The following day, at 09:30 UTC, a tape of the same 45-minute transmission was repeated. Well, obviously, that broadcast wasn't really from the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. It turns out the transmission came from a 60-watt pirate radio transmitter on a farm in the eastern part of the Netherlands. The two people behind it organized it as a stunt, as a vague form of solidarity with the British author. They've since gone underground, and the pirates have no connection with any legal broadcasting service in this country. Since there's not much in the way of long-distance propagation at that time, it's presumed the organisers wanted the satisfaction of having said something, rather than trying to make a serious attempt to get their bogus broadcast heard in the Middle East. And now, to to Central Europe. In Austria, some peculiar radio developments have recently been taking place. But first, a bit of history. Until 1955, the four Allied forces ran their own radios in their respective sectors of Austria and Vienna. Following independence, the Austrian government took over, but the national broadcast station was strongly influenced by those in power. About 20 years ago, the press in Austria campaigned for independent public broadcasting, and this was established in the form of Austrian Radio, or ORF in German. The ORF now runs two national radio networks, plus a host of regional stations, so there's certainly choice these days. Although there's no private commercial radio in Austria, the country is surrounded by Switzerland, Germany, Italy, Yugoslavia and Hungary, where it is allowed in one form or another. And many of the commercial stations deliberately aim their programmes at the Austrian listener. Wolf Harrant, editor of Radio Austria International's German language media programme, is on the line now with a story on how some people recently tried to start private radio on their own. Wolf.
Well, Jonathan, today you can listen to foreign private radio practically all over Austria, and the print media are not too happy about that development. If there is additional advertising money available, they want to cash in themselves. Consequently, negotiations have started between the PTT, the ORF, and the private sector, led by the print media, to establish in the near future private radio in Austria. Now, this is where the happy handful comes in, the fans of free or alternative radio. We never had hobby or commercial or clandestine pirates in Austria. About a year ago, one group started a series of five or six short transmissions with a leftish political tendency, and that was it. Now, for good reasons, these people are afraid they might be left behind or ignored in a future private radio. And so they did something about it. A couple of weeks ago, they joined forces with the FRRL, the Federation of European Free Radio, invited for a roundtable discussion amongst themselves to propagate free radio for Austria, and planned to transmit the proceedings live on an FM transmitter to the Greater Vienna area. I asked the man in charge, FERL's Dr. Christoph Lindenmeier, a Swiss, whether he really believed that the postal authorities would tolerate their broadcasting plans.
Das wird also für die Beamten in den Teilwagen ein freies Wochenende werden, weil bekannt ist.
Dr. Lindenmeier was quite optimistic that no intervention would take place, given the fact that date and venue of the meeting were publicly known. On the contrary, Dr. Günther Sellinger from the postal authorities told me that, of course, they would intervene if the broadcast was really started.
Sollte also ohne Bewilligung eine Ausstrahlung stattfinden, wird die Fernmeldebehörde bzw. die Funküberwachungsstelle sicher in der Angelegenheit einschreiten.
So on Saturday, the 18th of February, we were quite curious and, all right, at 18 hours local time, springtime radio indeed started on 103.5 MHz.
Heute, den 18. Februar 1989, hört ihr das erste Mal in Österreich freies Radio auf 103,5. Das Roundtable-Gespräch der Europäischen Föderation freier Radios. Radio Frühling.
It took only 2 minutes. And the PTT's Funküberwachung appeared on the scene. Dr. Lindenmeier tried to make the best of it and obviously hoped to kick up a major row.
Entschuldigen Sie mich, wenn es etwas chaotisch her und zugeht. Haben Sie hier einen Hausdurchsuchungsbefehl für hier? Dann bitte verlassen Sie dies. Es ist eine geschlossene Versammlung.
But all remained peaceful. The PTT officer cited the relevant paragraph of the law, asked to see the transmitter, and immediately afterwards the live transmission ended.
Ich bin Beamter der Funküberwachung und ich ersuche Sie, diese Funkanlage, die hier.
That was the end of it. Naturally, the organizers had expected such an intervention, and I believe even hoped for it, to stir up emotions. So they had prepared for a second transmitter somewhere else, and that one took over with a pre-recorded emergency program calling itself Radio Self-Defense.
Radio Notwehr 103,5. Radio Notwehr 103,5. Radio Notwehr 103,5.
Im Moment wird auf dem Leopoldsberg die erste öffentliche freie Radiosendung in Österreich von Postfüchsen und Strapazisten abgedreht.
In wishful thinking they had expected and thus reported an intervention of the state police, although that didn't even take place. Dr. Lindenmayer now denounced Austrian journalism, calling it the worst one in the world. And he called the PTT officials paranoids, remarking that those insane people are most dangerous.
Ich muss auch sagen, das Verhalten der österreichischen Behörden, paranoide Leute können sehr gefährlich werden.
Meanwhile, all was quiet on the free radio front, with the exception of the PTT's direction finders taking their bearings. And then the illegal transmitter was officially confiscated. And the whole thing had lasted hardly half an hour. Somehow we have to live with ORF's monopoly again and dearly miss the revelations of free, alternative, first-class radio.
Our thanks there to Wolf Harrant and our own station identification.
Radio Netherlands with 3.2 million watts of good ideas.
We received a call from Dr. Michael Beale, Associate Professor of Radio and Television at Morehead State University. That's in the state of Kentucky. Dr. Beale is running a European summer school for students interested in learning more about international broadcasting. So we phoned him for more details.
Well, we're taking students mainly from the United States over to Bregenz, Austria, and we'll be spending 6 weeks studying broadcasting there, and then the students will also be able to take trips on their own for 2 weeks after that. But we'll also be taking trips to some of the different stations in Austria, where we're going to be, but also in Switzerland and Germany, which you can see into from Bregenz, and then we're going to go behind the Iron Curtain over to Radio Budapest in Hungary.
So what are you planning to teach them? Because 6 weeks sounds like a long time.
Well, actually, we're just spending about an hour and a half per day in the classroom. So it'll take a while to get some of these students, who in some cases are not DXers, acclimated to what international broadcasting is all about, and teach them how to listen to different stations, and then also have listening assignments. They'll be assigned to listen to the stations from different countries and listen to the variations between the different domestic services in the local countries. But we're also not going to be only with radio. We'll be watching television as well.
The trip, organized by the Kentucky Institute for European Studies, leaves for Europe around May 29th. Students will gain 6 credit hours towards their school studies. But how much will it cost?
The cost that they're projecting right now is $2,480, which includes airfare, room, and most meals in Bregenz. It also includes 2-month Eurail pass, so you'll be able to travel around almost all of Western Europe for no additional charge. There will be a few extra expenses, incidentals, so probably under $3,000 should be able to handle it for most people.
If you're interested in that summer school about international broadcasting, here's the address to write to. Dr. Michael Beale, and Beale is spelled B-I-E-L, Morehead State University, UPO 893, Morehead, Kentucky, and the zip code is 40351, USA. That's Dr. Michael Beale, Morehead State University, UPO 893, Morehead, Kentucky, 40351, USA. During the local day, you can phone for more details. The area code is 606, then 783 27 94. That was area code 606 783 2794. Or in the evenings, area code 606 784 8404. Once again, 606 784 8404. And please, no collect calls. Now, how about this human item? The Radio Uganda newsroom was recently thrown into pandemonium when a veteran newsreader found himself face-to-face with a venomous snake in the studio. During the 22 hours English news bulletin, listeners heard the newscaster gasp, "Oh my God, good night!" And Radio Uganda went off the air, leaving some listeners thinking there might have been a sudden coup. Well, Andy Sennett of the World Radio TV Handbook returns this week with a couple of items now. You seem to be doing a lot of listening lately, Andy.
Yes, I do, mainly at weekends. And, for example, on Sunday I came across a harmonic signal from Radio Baku in the USSR, which I hadn't noticed before, but my colleagues at BBC Monitoring tell me it's been there for a while. The frequency was 18329.7 kHz, 18329.7, that's 3 times 6109.9, between 15 and 17 hours UTC. And at this time, the transmitter carries the external service in Turkish and Arabic. Now, between midnight and 1500 UTC, the domestic service is relayed, so there's plenty of opportunity to log this one in other parts of the world when propagation is right.
Which it hasn't been, unfortunately, for the last couple of days. We've also had some reaction to the item we carried 2 weeks ago about VOA Pacific. It seems the programme is also to be heard on shortwave now.
This is VOA Pacific. Hi, I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. On today's show, we'll examine U.S. export opportunities.
Several callers to our answer line report hearing that program in two parts on a Saturday via VOA's shortwave service as from the start of March. It runs 19 to 20 hours UTC and then again 21 to 22 hours on three frequencies, 15, 185, 11965 and finally 9525 kilohertz. Right, Andy, let's go down to medium wave now.
Yes, well, Stephen Proctor in England sent me a copy of a verification letter he received from a new medium wave station on the Caribbean island of Dominica. The station is called Voice of the Islands and operates on 860 kHz, 860, with a power of 10 kilowatts, between 1000 and 0300 UTC. Voice of the Islands is a Catholic station operated by the Antilles Episcopal Conference, but the programming is quite varied, including relays of the BBC and Voice of America. Their address is P.O. Box 402, Rosso, Commonwealth of Dominica. And by the way, Stephen heard the station while he was in Barbados.
Well, thanks to all of today's contributors. I'll be back on Monday when Research File also visits Bonaire. Join us in the Caribbean paradise. Goodbye till then. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.